This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, The Aftermath of Viruses. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Chances are the pandemic and the long haulers will bring an infusion of research dollars to study how viruses can affect us in the long run. And this may finally shed some light on some other potentially post-viral conditions that plague lots of people. Jad Slaman has this look.
Psychologist Leonard Jason knew that the COVID long haulers were coming way before anyone even had a name for them.
You know, when we began hearing about individuals getting sick with this particular virus, we just assumed that there would be a certain percentage of individuals who did not recover, and they ended up calling them long haulers.
He directs the Center for Community Research at DePaul University in Chicago. He tells me it was no surprise some subset of those infected just stayed sick, because that kind of thing has always happened.
So if you look at all the different viruses that have occurred, from the Spanish flu, 1918, to Ebola, to SARS, I mean, a certain percentage of people don't recover. And that's what we're interested in. Why is it that some people don't recover from a wide different host of different viruses that have occurred over the last 100 years?
Leonard works with a community suffering from a disease many experts believe has a viral trigger. It's a baffling condition with a wide range of symptoms.
The fatigue is profound. It's like wearing a suit of armor and the floor is a magnet.
That's Kim Carlson of Minneapolis.
Brain fog, where it's tough to put thoughts together. It kind of felt like the flu without the stomach ache.
Justin Blonstein of California.
It's like being held to your bed with invisible straps, day in and day out.
And Anne McDonald of St. Louis. They were all diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. It's characterized by this relentless tiredness. This disease is also commonly known as myalgic encephalomyelitis. So we'll call it ME-CFS. Here's Anne again.
Having ME-CFS is like straining to walk through the deep end of the pool when you're simply trying to get from your bed to the bathroom.
And Kim, she says you gotta be vigilant.
One of the most difficult aspects of daily life is always monitoring how much gas is in my tank as far as my energy reserves and trying not to overdo.
If someone with this condition is too active for too long, they could crash hard and find themselves bedbound.
I even wear a Fitbit to see how few steps I can take in a day.
ME-CFS has long been linked to the Epstein-Barr virus, which causes mono. But there's no concrete test for ME-CFS, and there are dozens of other suspected causes. That speaks to maybe one of the toughest parts of having this disease, not being taken seriously.
Being dismissed by doctors is soul-crushing.
It can be very frustrating because it's been more of shoulder shrugs than anything else.
That disbelief is how Leonard, who, remember, is a psychologist, got involved with this community. When physicians don't know what to do for a patient, they'll sometimes suggest therapy. Back in the day, instead of calling it chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME, this condition was sometimes called yuppie flu, as in made-up nonsense.
And it's easy for, you know, the healthcare worker to say, well, maybe you're just depressed. Maybe, you know, you just need to sleep better, and you'll get over this, and why not just take this antidepressant?
That attitude is part of the reason why this condition got so little official attention.
In 1991, myself and Judy Richmond, who's a sociologist at the University of Illinois Chicago, we sort of marveled at the fact that there were so few people identified with this illness by the CDC at the time.
The Centers for Disease Control thought there are maybe 20,000 people with this disease in the United States. But at the time, just one major ME-CFS support organization had more active members than that.
And also, it seemed at the time we were getting estimates that 3,000 to 4,000 people every month were calling the CDC with trying to get information about this type of fatiguing illness. So we thought that their estimate of less than 20,000 people was an underestimate.
Which is a bit of an understatement. Leonard and his colleagues wanted to get a sense of the true prevalence. They screened a random sample of thousands of people from diverse ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds, mostly over the phone. From that work, they estimate the true number of people with ME/CFS to be around 1 to 1.5 million. Women were 2 to 4 times more likely to be diagnosed.
And by the way, it turns out that individuals of color, Black and individuals who are Latinx, actually are higher rate.
Medicine doesn't really understand this disease yet, but that doesn't make it any less real for those who have it.
If you've got multiple different reasons for a person seeming to get sick, in some cases they can't find any reason, they just slowly got worse over time, then it's harder to attribute it to something specific.
Leonard and his colleagues think some kind of attack on the brain is what causes ME/CFS. In the case of viral infection, they think it could be linked to what's known as a cytokine storm. You may have heard of it in COVID patients. It's basically an overreaction of the immune system that can start to damage and destroy tissues, causing harmful swelling, sometimes in the brain. But it may also be that ME/CFS, or at least some cases of it, could be caused by something else, something that isn't even on anyone's radar.
But unexplained illnesses, as these things are, unfortunately, really consume a lot of healthcare dollars. And I don't know if you know, about 80% of lower back pain is unexplained. So a lot of people go to physicians, something like 20, 25% of visits are for things like pain and fatigue, many cases unexplained.
Hard to explain medical problems, he says, can often become easy to dismiss medical problems. That's especially true when the weird cases trickle in here and there. These people were invisible to the larger healthcare community, one, because their symptoms were so strange and varied, and two, because there wasn't one big cause that could tie all these patients together. Now, with the pandemic, millions of people are getting the same virus. Thousands of them are just staying sick, and it's happening all at once. Leonard thinks that makes for a more clear pattern, one that's hard to ignore.
With COVID-19, you can see a very different case where you know that people had this particular illness and they got sick after it. Well, with ME/CFS, you didn't have everybody have like a virus like COVID that basically had an insult to their system of which they didn't recover.
The pandemic and its sudden onslaught of strange long haulers unable to smell, out of breath for months on end, that may force a change. They've ignited renewed investment and research that could end up helping those with ME/CFS. But Leonard tells me the sheer visibility of long haulers is invaluable.
I think the fact that there's so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are sick, who have had, you know, stellar careers and they want to basically figure out what's wrong. You have that whole group that is, basically trying to get their voice heard. They won't be silenced.
For those long-suffering COVID long haulers, there may be some comfort in knowing that they've joined a community of people in those with ME/CFS, a community that they maybe didn't know existed. Both parties hopefully less alone and a little louder post-pandemic. For The Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.